A call to all Canadians issued by the Provincial Council of the Republic of Canada. Tomorrow, on October 19th, you will be asked to commit treason by using a ballot to sign away your sovereign authority to an unaccountable and criminal foreign ruler, the so-called Queen of England. Your rulers call this democracy. We call it slavery and an act of treason. Every member of parliament you elect will take an oath of allegiance not to you or to the laws of Canada, but to Queen Elizabeth II and all of her descendants. Rather than accountable representatives, you will be electing servants of a crown that is guilty of centuries of genocide, theft, and fraud against all the peoples of Canada. Why hand over your power to such a tyranny? Canadians are awakening to this crime. Nearly 60% of you want to end all ties with the British Crown and establish a sovereign republic in Canada. Last January 15th, patriots across our country acted on this majority mandate and established a legal framework for such a republic. You can now live under the freedom and jurisdiction of this republic and help bring about a new, true society under the common law. By refusing to vote tomorrow, October 19th, and by withholding your taxes to the unaccountable puppet government in Ottawa, you are declaring your refusal to live any longer under a corrupt foreign power. But we must do more than disestablish the old tyranny. Across Canada, the new republic is being built on the ground according to the will of we the people, who are the source of all law and government. The police, judges, and civil servants of Canada are now being asked publicly to disavow their allegiance to the criminal crown and its laws and to swear loyalty to the people of Canada and the rising new republic. A constitutional convention to establish the first Republican Congress and its laws will be convened in the future as a working alternative to the criminal regime in Ottawa. Help us create a future of justice and freedom for all of our people and our children. Take the pledge of citizenship to the Republic of Canada, join your local Republican group, and reclaim all that has been taken from us. For more information, see canadarepublic.ca. Do not vote. This has been a statement of the Republic of Canada Provisional Council. And welcome to the Voice of the Republic. I am Kevin Anich, your host. Welcome as well to my co-host, Ryan Gable. We're here today to talk about not just the upcoming election fraud tomorrow in Canada, but are the alternatives we're building on the ground to replace that system. And including, especially, we're going to get into today about the whole issue of what we really live under, which is a corporatocracy. And the new kind of covenanted relationships that are a challenge to that corporatocracy on the ground. So we're going to talk generally about that. Let me welcome Ryan, first of all, my co-host. How are you, Ryan?
I'm doing great, Kevin.
I thought we should kick off today, especially with that bagpipe music, since, you know, in many ways we're evoking the memory and the spirit of our ancestors and all that we do in this struggle for freedom.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, if I could play devil's advocate for a moment, I had someone say to me yesterday, because I mentioned to them that I wouldn't vote for either political party. And they said, but Ryan, that's part of the problem is that people aren't voting out there.
Well, I mean, you know, the old saying is if you vote, you have no one to blame but yourself. People don't realize, first of all, that the whole system is fraudulent now. I'm looking at an article, actually, called How to Steal an Election. And it's just for people who think that voting is some kind of bona fide system nowadays. It says, some Princeton researchers made a demonstration video recently of how it's possible to steal an election with a Diebold voting machine in under a minute. Anyone with physical access to the machine can put in malicious software to steal votes, such as election workers who have unsupervised access to the machines before elections. All they have to do is open up the machine with a key, remove the old memory card, stick in your own memory card, boot the machine, and it automatically installs any software that was on the memory card. So, you know, it doesn't really matter where you are. More and more of these Diebold election machines are taking over. I did some research and found that while they're really prevalent in America, in Canada as well, which traditionally is used paper voting cards, they are now introducing electronic voting machines all over the country. As a matter of fact, in the federal election tomorrow, there will be Diebold machines counting up the vote. And, you know, in Canada, unlike in America, in Canada, there is no electronic voting standard laws. So there are no standards governing the use of electronic machines. So it shows you that tomorrow, even if you weren't handing over your authority to a foreign tyrant, Queen Elizabeth, even if it was a genuine system of representative government, it's still rigged from top to bottom.
That's actually what I was going to say. Even if you weren't handing over your sovereignty and your freedom in that way, it's still a rigged system, or it can be rigged. And like you said in that article about the voting machine and how easy it is to alter it by just simply opening the thing up, putting a new memory card in, and then as soon as it boots up, it basically downloads that malware into the system, and it just can process whoever you choose to have elected. I mean, that's really simple on a smaller level, but I mean, we're talking about a corrupt governmental system that is able to steal an election in a much more surgical, precise way. I actually remember back in like 2000. Remember the Florida election that got George Bush the son elected over Al Gore, and there was the big recount. You remember all that stuff in the news, Kevin?
Yeah, and two Supreme Court judges decided the election, basically, or that one. Yeah.
Exactly, and I remember reading in the newspaper down there, even though I was much younger, I was only like 9 years old at the time, but I was still sort of interested in it, and I read in the newspaper, and I remember hearing other people talking about how off the interstate there coming out of Tampa Bay, there were thousands and thousands of paper ballots found for Al Gore that had just literally been dumped in the forest off the side of the interstate. They just dumped them there.
Right. Well, you know, it's of course Al Gore didn't challenge it. He just went along. But I mean, all of the political parties, they serve the corporatocracy, and so it really doesn't matter who you elect. In Canada, the news tonight on the CBC is that, well, it looks like the Liberals might actually take the election. I mean, Tweedledum and Tweedledee, they're funded by the same power corporation, the global elites here in Canada that really value Canada primarily as a resource base for the various empires around the world. But they need compliant parties in power, and both the Liberals and the Conservatives are funded to the hilt by these people and support, for example, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. As one example of the growing corporatocracy, where corporations get to rule whole areas directly without regard to the law. So, I mean, it really doesn't matter if the Liberals do get in tomorrow. That's really the same ship with a different mask on itself. Right?
Yeah, I think it's taking its toll finally globally, anywhere where there's any form of democracy. I think people are slowly beginning to realize that, most people have this amnesia that, well, I vote for a Republican. Republican gets in office, or conservative, if you will, and they get in there and everything stays the same. And you say, okay, well, let's vote for a Democrat, a liberal this time. And then you do that and everything basically stays exactly the same. And nothing really ever changes except for the on-the-surface arguments about abortion or about guns or something very minuscule like that that just kind of eats people's attention up, and they don't pay attention to the larger overarching themes that both of them are literally financed by the same people. And I think eventually, and we're starting to see this, at least I am here where I've been living across different places in the country, where people are starting to wake up to this, and they just simply don't care about either political party, this new generation that's coming about. And the problem is they need to be informed that you can still make a difference at a local level, whether it's electing sheriffs that share those constitutional beliefs, whatever the case may be, but still finding people who want to do the right thing, people like you, people like myself, who aren't corrupted or who will at least stand by those traditional types of values. So I think that it's not that the election in and of itself should always leave a really nasty taste in your mouth, because it can still be used for good. It's just the way that it's handled right now is horrendously corrupt. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that about the youth vote, because in Canada here, according to the latest polls, over almost three quarters of people over 35 years old actually vote. But for those under the age of 35, only 30% of them vote. And I think it's indicative of this growing awareness and alienation, especially of the youth from the system. And those are the people we especially need to appeal to show that no, politics doesn't consist of voting. As a matter of fact, the Athenian notion of democracy originally was that every citizen should be able to be called on at any moment to exercise any office. So they had actually a lot system. People would draw lots, all the citizens. Now, of course, back then we're talking about the white slave-owning males, right? they were considered citizens. But at least the principle of Athenian democracy was that you choose ballots, and whoever gets the ballot, they serve as the judge, or they serve as the legislature that year. And that notion of participatory rather than representative, where you hand over your sovereign authority, that's the difference between a republic, which is based on sovereignty of the individual, and a democracy, where you hand over your authority to somebody else.
Now, also, I wanted to bring something up, get your take on this. In terms of a democracy, in terms of a republic, other different forms of governmental tyrannies, if you will, it seems like in a large country like a United States, like a Canada, that any form of democracy, any form of republic is sort of hard to maintain entirely. But and I think that's one of the things that's always been pushed, that it's hard to maintain this, so the best thing to do is basically eliminate all sovereignty, create a globalized system, and then have one or two people that basically make all the decisions. Maybe you could speak on the misinformation of that, if you will.
Well, you know, it's kind of that old adage about people are too apathetic, they need somebody to think and speak for them. And unfortunately, when you get above a certain size, there tends to be the... I remember reading an anthropology somewhere once that above a group of 150 people or so, you get hierarchy developing because people can't remember everybody's name, and so you need somebody to mediate it.
Yes.
And so you find that in traditional societies, when you get above about a band-level society, then you start getting oppression and warfare and all this stuff. And it's interesting that traditional communal societies like the Hutterites or the old order Amish, they always break off when their communes get larger than about 100 people. They break off to keep things small. So I think, you know, real sovereign government can only happen on the small scale local level, that you get to a certain size and yes, you have corporations develop, and that we have to decentralize. We have to get people to take back power directly. And that's, in fact, where a lot of the focus of our work is, building up these local people's assemblies in communities, getting people to establish their own common law courts, elect their own peace officers, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, also something else that we're talking about, that lower 30%, that kind of untapped vote within the youth that really wasn't, it was utilized with the Obama election. They tapped into that, but in general, the youth don't typically vote because they usually either aren't aware of what's going on politically and don't care because they've kind of been raised to be that way, or they realize that most of the time it's just really a rigged election and they don't see a point in doing it. And regardless of the argument for either, one of the things that's not being taught nowadays, Kevin, and I think that this is basically in any free country, is that there's forms of democracy, that democracy at some point can eventually become basically a lynch mob where 51% can vote, the other 49% need to be executed, and democratically you could vote for that if you will. So using that as an example, what is it about democracy that makes it separate from the republic? And the reason I ask that is because nowadays in America, nobody talks about the republic. All they do is they run around screaming, America, we're free, we're a democracy, we can vote for things. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're free.
No, absolutely. As a matter of fact, if people want the real notion of what sovereignty is all about, they should read The Social Contract by Jean-Jacques Rousseau, which was really the model of the Founding Fathers. They all read Rousseau. They all understood that a government didn't mean handing over your sovereign authority to somebody else, which is what you have nowadays. It meant, and Rousseau had this famous statement in The Social Contract where he says that when you elect a sovereign, you have not surrendered your authority to him. You can withdraw that sovereign permission at any point. And that's why, you know, that this thing that's brainwashed into us that we have to obey authority, no, we don't at all. No authority is legitimate without our consent. That's bottom line. And, you know, this whole notion of an election, too, it draws our energy and power away from ourselves and gives it to an unaccountable system. And so when we were talking a few weeks ago about Xi and taking back our energy, you know, Sun Tzu's whole argument about how you engage with a stronger opponent, we're talking about, as the primary aim, taking back our own power from the existing system. And that has to be our focus strategically. It can't be finding new and more, you know, egalitarian ways of handing over that authority to somebody else. we have to take it back. That's kind of bottom line.
Well, that's the bottom line in terms of freedom and in terms of sovereignty. And I think the same thing goes for the concept of inalienable inherent rights, where people will say, well, what does it really matter if I'm being spied on? What does it matter if my privacy or my right to free speech is being violated because, we need to do this to prevent terrorism or whatever the argument might be? What people don't understand, Kevin, is that you don't necessarily need rights until someone tries to restrict those abilities and someone tries to tell you, hey, you can't talk about that. Hey, you can't say that. Hey, you can't gather in a group like that. Hey, you can't protest. Hey, you can't have a way to defend yourself. And then when someone tries to take those away, some oppressor, some tyrant, that's when you need to exercise them. And if you don't, and if you willingly give up those rights, whether it's privacy or a right to defend yourself or whatever the case might be, once you give up one of those rights, you've given up all of those rights, and they no longer become rights. They become privileges that you've, just like voting, are giving that authority and that power over to somebody else.
Well, it's. I'm glad you raised this because until the bottom of the hour, I want to talk a little bit about some urgent action notices I had as well to bring this up to date. There's several people in Canada here who, like Dean Clifford, are being targeted for their advocacy of personal sovereignty and the fact that they've been holding workshops on the common law in their own communities. These two men are Yves Dubé, who's a Quebecois. He lives in Quebec City. And a man called Tom, who's a journeyman in Cornwall, Ontario, who's now in jail for 40 days because he was driving without a license. And he was holding, as did Dean Clifford, he was holding workshops on teaching people their common law rights. Now, both of these men are political prisoners. They're being targeted. Yves Dubé is going into court this week on October 20th on trumped-up charges. We are presently working with him, actually issuing what's called a peremptory mandamus, which is a writ that he's going to hand to the court judge and say, look, we are removing your case. This man is being tried unfairly and unlawfully. He's being targeted. And his rights are being stripped away, we are removing the case from your jurisdiction into the jurisdiction of the Common Law Court of Quebec.
So is this like jury nullification?
In this case, it's the whole court nullification. It's saying that, first of all, you're serving a corrupt criminal regime called the Crown of England. Secondly, you're railroading this man and denying him his sovereign Magna Carta rights. And so we are simply a peremptory mandamus is simply a command, an order to a judge or any public official that your authority is nullified. We are removing this from your jurisdiction.
Have you ever heard of a guy named Alexander Tyler?
No.
He was a Scottish historian or a history professor. I know he taught at the University of Edinburgh, and he talked about the Athenian Republic. He wrote about it, and I have a little quote from him here. He says, quote, "A democracy is always temporary in nature. It simply cannot exist as a permanent form of government. A democracy will continue to exist up until the time that voters discover that they can vote themselves generous gifts from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidate who promises the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that every democracy will finally collapse over loose fiscal policy, which is always followed by a dictatorship." And he also adds to that, Kevin, he says the average age of the world's greatest civilizations from the beginning of history has been about 200 years. During those 200 years, these nations always progressed through the following sequence. And I think this sequence is very important. He says the sequence is basically from bondage to spiritual faith and from spiritual faith to great courage. And as people gain great courage, they find the source of liberty. From liberty, they create abundance. From abundance, they form complacency. From complacency, they become apathetic. And from apathy, they become dependent. And through the dependence, once again, they fall back into bondage. It's like a cycle of history.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with a lot of that. But in our case, I don't think you can even make the argument that Canada even began with any of those fundamental liberties. It's been a corporate crown-based system from the very beginning.
I agree with you there. I just, in general, just to give people an idea of the cycle of how it processes, but you're right. I mean, if you don't have that base originally, then you never even went through the cycle entirely from the beginning.
And that's what you find in Canada, especially. The understanding here of people's own sovereign political rights is abysmal. It's like talking to children. When you say to Canadians, yes, you have the the right to say no to authority. They don't believe it. And in the case of the fellows I mentioned, Yves Dubay, Tom in Cornwall, Dean Clifford and others, we have a police state operating right under our nose at the very moment that people think that they have freedom. You have it until you push and try to use it, and then you get stomped on and you realize the rule of law does not exist. We have to create that rule of law. And that's why I wanted to kind of flag that for people. Anyone listening, if you find yourself in the same position as Eve or Tom or Dean and are being targeted in your community by the police, by child welfare, by any of these agencies, by corrupt judges, contact us, republicofcanada@gmail.com. We can intervene in your case and help you the way we're helping Eve Dubay in court with these mandamus orders to the judge to stand down, basically. And that is a special weight in Canada when the whole system has to stand down because it's serving a convicted criminal power called the Crown of England and its sponsor in Rome. So I just want to put that out there so people can be aware that they all have a responsibility listening to monitor our own communities and defend our neighbors when they're being attacked like these brothers in Quebec and Cornwall.
I'm curious, in terms of the election in Canada, Kevin, what are some of the, I'm sure it's kind of set up like here in America, what are some of the base issues that are constantly discussed in the media as being somewhat relevant and important, even though they're just distractions?
Oh, in Canada?
Yes.
The Canadian media focus on things like, oh, well, the Liberal Party is now run by Justin Trudeau, who's Pierre Elliott Trudeau's son. Trudeau was the prime minister for many years in Canada. And, he, though called a liberal, he brought in the War Measures Act in 1970, a very repressive regime. And now his son, Justin Trudeau, by right of dynastic succession, is now head of the Liberal Party, and everyone's all wild about him because he has a nice, handsome face. That's about the level of, that's about the level of media dialogue about the election in Canada. It's also been arranged that there's one conservative party, but four other parties that are more progressive. And so it's been arranged that the progressive vote is split four ways. There's the Bloc Québécois in Quebec, there's the New Democratic Party and the Green Party, and there's the Liberal Party. And the four of them are splitting the anti-conservative vote so effectively that, it's one of the ways that the Tory party has been kept in power for so many years. But again, the name of a party doesn't matter. They're all taking the same oath of allegiance to this corporatocracy overseas.
Exactly. And that corporatocracy, for the most part, has basically been ruled a convicted criminal individuals or a convicted criminal body, a criminal institution like the Roman Catholic Church. What does international law say about these regimes like Canada, like some of these international criminal corporations?
Well, the main thing we point people to is not just the statutes of the International Criminal Court, which time and again say that citizens have an obligation not to support their own governments, either by taxes or any other means, and that would include voting, if they've committed war crimes, which Canada has in its mass murder of native children, its trafficking of children, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of precedent in international law for backing what we're doing, but the problem is enforcement. And no government wants to take on another government. So it's up to the citizens to link up across borders and do that. And that's what we've been doing through the ITCCS and other groups. And I want to get into that more, Ryan, at the end of the break. We've only got about a minute or two before the break. I also want to get into in the last half of the show, the discussion of the alternatives and how we're appealing to conscious minorities and not necessarily right away to the whole mass of people. And I've got some very interesting thoughts from Sun Tzu in The Art of War about that. But before we get there, let me just introduce this little thing at the bottom. It's a song called The Wind That Shakes the Barley. And you might have seen the film about that. It's about the Civil War in Ireland in the early part of the 20th century. But the term The Wind That Shakes the Barley was developed by the Irish Republican movement. And it referred to its own movement as a wind that comes through the land and shakes up the barley and spreads seeds everywhere. They were up against the biggest empire in the world and they beat them because they thought in terms that we're going to talk about, Sun Tzu and the Art of War, how you operate as a guerrilla movement. And we're going to get into that, but let's listen to the song first and we'll be back after the break.
I sat within the valley green I sat me with my true love. My sad heart strove to between the old love and the new love.
And we're back. Yes, with a tear in my eye. that's one of my favorite songs. It's just so evocative for me. In this the work we're doing, Ryan, it's really a matter of the heart, a lot of what we do. And I know that after a while listening to the show, people can think, you know, this is a lot of ideas, a lot of stuff to take in, but it's all very simple. You know, when you're living under a tyranny, you have to not go along anymore. And there's a price to be paid for that. You know, there's a price being paid right now by these guys in prison, like Tom, who said he didn't want to cooperate with the system anymore in a town like Cornwall, where the police and the judges are all operating openly, trafficking children across the border. You know, that was proved by policemen like Perry Dunlop. What do you do as an honest person in a system when you're caught into that? And this is why we're here, as a resource for those kind of people, to allow them to stand up against tyranny. What are your thoughts on that, Ryan?
Well, first of all, I completely agree with you. And I think when people say that no progress is being made and that, yes, these might be really good ideas, but it's the enforcement or the implementation that's lacking, I used to think that even up to maybe 6 months ago. And then I started realizing the more that you and I spoke and the more work we did together that's not true at all. In fact, it's the very opposite. The fact that we're even having this conversation right now is progress in the right direction. I mean, the founding fathers here in America, they didn't just one day, you know, decide that, oh, we're going to declare independence from Britain. I mean, it was secret meetings. I mean, it was trying to, you know, keep information secret from British spies. And this is what we're doing now. This is the beginning of what will now be not just a revolution in Canada or in America. And I don't mean a violent war type of revolution. I'm talking a spiritualized revolution, a revelation, if you will. And I think that what we're doing right now, Kevin, is basically the foundation for that. What do you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, I wanted to share a saying under the law. It's cogitus ponam nemo emerit. It's a Latin word. It means no man may be punished for his thoughts. Okay? Now, in Canada, these people in prison are being punished for their thoughts, just like under the Homeland Security laws. They are being framed as something that the government, the FBI and the Canadian government call freemen on the land. And this has happened to a number of our friends and a number of people we work with. All they do is make a suggestion in court that, oh, they're members of Freemen on the Land, and suddenly, you know, they can be stuck away in jail. Now, Freemen on the Land is not an organization. It's not a, quote, terrorist group like the FBI says it is. It's an idea, and an idea that says that people are innately sovereign. It's, in fact, an idea that came from the American Constitution originally and the American revolutionaries, and that is we are not... We don't derive our freedom from governments and their say-so. We derive it from our Creator under natural law, and we have the right to withdraw that at any time. Having that thought makes us guilty. We are being punished for our thoughts, and that's the reality of what we're dealing with.
That's exactly right, and you know, as a matter of fact, what we're seeing now here in America is that, and I mean, this is like you just mentioned the FBI. I mean, this isn't just in America. It's in so many different countries that experience some form of freedom or democracy. The freemen on the land kind of an argument is something that the FBI has used, and here they call it sovereign citizens. And what they're doing, Kevin, is in a lot of FBI training videos, and specifically with police, they're creating this artificial divide, this artificial polarity where they basically, all you hear about in the news is police brutality and how police are bad. So they basically train the populace to believe that police and law enforcement is bad while at the same time saying they're good and you have to respect them. So that creates like this friction. And then at the same time they're doing that, they are able to send out memos to the FBI and all law enforcement agencies. And when I say they, I'm talking about Department of Justice, White House, the heads up at the top of these agencies and organizations that push this George Soros agenda. And they have this... these training videos now where they literally teach police officers and the FBI, and this goes back into the 90s, that, look, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, these were really bad people. They were terrorists. Anybody that expresses the same ideas are on the same level.
They are not good people. Anybody that has people have got arrested in Texas before for having a pocket constitution in their car or having a bumper sticker that says the Bill of Rights. I mean, these are all documented cases. So what that says to me is that this what we have as freedom is basically an illusion, first of all. And it goes back to what we first started talking about when we came on air today, and that is when you vote in this election, whether it's in Canada or anywhere else, you're basically giving up your freedom and your sovereignty to these other individuals who are truly sovereign, the crown, the queen. They see themselves as sovereign. They see themselves as above the law. It's an outside entity. And so what I see here happening in both Canada and America is when you express your feelings and you're arrested for that, or when you're arrested for expressing, you know, opinions or thoughts on the founding of the country, the fact that you're arrested for that is basically an act of treason, or it shows you that there's a treasonous entity within the government that operates under the guise of freedom. I just think it's really important to flag that for people, that if you're getting arrested or you're even afraid to talk about this, and police and law enforcement are being taught that the founding fathers and that ideas of liberty or libertarians are terrorists, that's a major, major problem. And that shows you where we are headed in the future if we don't kind of reverse and make a U-turn.
Well, two things on that, Ryan. First of all, we want to give the people going through this a platform. And one of the things we're going to be doing in the weeks ahead is allow Yves Dubé and Tom and the others who have been targeted in this way to come on the air and talk about their story.
That's great.
Because when people hear the details of how others are standing up, they will gain courage to be able to stand up as well. So that's one of the main things. I know over the last couple of weeks we've been having a dialogue between you and I to kind of give people more of a background as to our ideas and where we're going. But we do want to open this up as well on two fronts, not just to people on the ground who are doing things, the actual frontline organizers, but I want to introduce something in the weeks ahead where we take 10 or 15 minutes in every show, or maybe once a month or something, and have a concerted kind of spiritual reflection, where myself and you and others can come on and give like a little mini sermon. I don't know if you want to call it a sermon, but some kind of table talk spiritual reflection to kind of flesh out really what you're talking about, that this is a spiritual revolution we're undertaking, and we're appealing to the hearts and the minds of everyone out there, including the police and the people in so-called power. So that's some things to look forward to. And further along of what you're saying, there's one of the maxims in The Art of War by Sun Tzu. He says, seasoned minorities alone are capable of sustained and purposeful action and thereby victory. Only veterans are capable of victorious combat by leading the inexperienced or wavering mass in their wake. The leadership of this vanguard of veterans is the key to victory in every battle. And I wanted to share that with people because in reality, who we're appealing to on this show is not everybody. We're appealing to that minority who have woken up and who have engaged and who want to do something, that vanguard of veterans who, from their own experience, have the courage and the abilities to sustain this battle, because we put out a call to the Republic and a lot of people were interested, but nobody did anything because they're waiting for somebody else to take the leadership. That's the mass of people. We have to organize not that mass, but the minority who are conscious and organized. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's pretty accurate. And I was actually thinking something along the same lines. In terms of leadership, people always want someone to sort of take the lead. And you mentioned that mass of about 150 people, and once you surpass that in a society, it sort of becomes difficult to have any form of governance, because at some point when you get above that many people, there starts to be oppression and a hierarchy forms. So in looking at it from that perspective, I think that, and when I say leader, I don't mean that you, Kevin, or myself is any better than anybody else out there. That's not what it means. It just means we're taking the lead on something that other people haven't done. We're sort of paving the way for other people to realize that, hey, look, other people think this way. You know, I don't have to be afraid. I can stand up and I can declare independence myself, and I can be a sovereign individual. I can join with these other people who are speaking out, and I don't have to necessarily fear the persecution of going at this just by myself, which to some people is almost like a spiritual and maybe even a suicide attempt in some way, if you understand what I mean. So,
I do.
I think, go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry, finish your thought. No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so I think that that's extremely accurate, and I think people need to realize that if you're looking for somebody to take the lead, whether it's me or Kevin or anybody else in the line of work that we're doing this because we believe in it. We're not doing this because someone's paying us to do this. We're doing this because this is historically how freedom, how liberty has been established throughout history, throughout all recorded history, and so on and so forth. And I think that if we don't understand as individuals that we have this power and we don't have to depend on other people and that we can stand up and take this power, we might have leaders within our own movement, of course, but we have to not necessarily rely on other people. We first of all have the power, and then if we need a little bit of a push to move on to the next step and find out what to do, that's when you look for someone paving that path, and I think that's what we're trying to do here.
Well, you know, the best story I like that illustrates this is in when you're reading in the Gospel of Matthew and Luke about the Sermon on the Mount. It's a popular misconception that Jesus was preaching to the multitude. What he was doing in those accounts is he was feeding the multitude. You know, the story of the loaves and fishes. He fed the 6,000 people. And then it says, and this is always missed out, he turned to his disciples and said, "Blessed are you who are poor," etc. And then he went on to preach to them the Beatitudes, which is really has been called the secret teachings of Christ. It's kind of like his vision and perspective. He was not preaching to the masses of people. They were eating. He was speaking to his disciples. It said he turned to them and said. So in the same way, the inspiration we get is not meant for most people who basically operate on a bread and butter level. We are talking about, if you want to call them disciples, but the vanguard, the ones who are conscious, they have a lot of experience. Like I was led to this through 20 years of experience, having my eyes ripped open as to the nature of the system, this bloody system we're living under. Those are the people we turn to with this message. And they're the only ones who are going to get it, frankly. The majority are not going to understand this. They're going to operate out of fear and self-defensiveness, like most of them have been conditioned to do. We are out to organize this conscious minority, and those are the ones who we're appealing to on this show.
Absolutely, and I'm sure you've heard of the Philosopher's Stone, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Philosopher's Stone, whether you read Harry Potter or you maybe read some fantasy book or something, you read about alchemy in a very literal sense, people think that this Philosopher's Stone is this object that you can obtain, and basically it turns anything into gold, any type of metal, it can just easily transform it into gold. Well, that's another concept, sort of like the secret teachings, the name of my show, and the secret teachings of Christ, if you will. And that Philosopher's Stone didn't necessarily refer to a physical stone. It referred to a state of mind. It refers to a point of wisdom that you can reach and you can attain within life, so that once you obtain that wisdom, i.e. the Philosopher's Stone, or what might be called the powder of projection, it actually allows you to transform your perspective, to transform your lifestyle. So you're transforming that lump of clay, that dirty metal, into something that's illuminated, into something that's enlightened. So that's basically what we're having to do. And you just said that you had to go through this. I've had to go through this. We both had to go through an alchemical process where we realize what the problem was. We attain that knowledge, that understanding. We obtain that Philosopher's Stone. And then over time, we were able to transform that lump of clay into something of precious value.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting that, like, along those lines too, all of our work on trying to teach people the common law and their inherent sovereign liberties, establishing this new republic, taking on the corporatocracy and replacing it with a new covenant, all of this is what I found from my experience is when you try to teach people this, it's like trying to feed a baby solid food. They haven't been walked through the stages. They haven't been deconditioned enough to really accept what we're talking about. And so we're really only understood by a small number of people, but that's all right, because as we've seen, creative minorities can change things fundamentally. You don't need the mass of people. We didn't have a lot of people when we forced Canada to acknowledge genocide, or we forced Pope Benedict to resign. You know, that didn't take numbers. It took where we are strategically and our determination and our consciousness. And if you press at the right spot, you can take on these enormous adversaries and win. That didn't take numbers. That took conscious, you know, choice on our part and awareness of what we're dealing with.
Right, and people start sort of coming out of hiding when you do that too. I actually have a good example. I went to the grocery store yesterday to get some groceries, And there's a guy in there that works at the store who I know sort of personally. I've talked to him a few times, and he was interested in my radio show. And I started talking to him, and as I was talking to him about all sorts of different subjects, what we're discussing and so much more, you see these other people working there, they started looking at us. There were three other guys in this aisle putting stuff away on the shelves, and they started looking at us. And at first, my initial instinct is that, oh, they're going to say something. They're going to get this guy in trouble for talking about it. And then all of a sudden, one of the guys blurted out, you know, in relation to what we were talking about, something that kind of went along with the conversation. And then he started talking with us. And then there was these two other guys that were doing the same thing. So the point is, I started talking to one person who was interested. It might not seem like a lot, but then all of a sudden, three other people who overhear the conversation come up and start talking because they're all interested too. They just think that if they talk about it individually or they speak with somebody else who might not be aware of it or might not care about these topics, these subjects, then they're going to be criticized or looked at as being inferior or whatever the case might be. But it's just an example that if you just have a strong will, if you just have a strong mind and you know the truth and you just speak it, people will start to come out of hiding and they will kind of team up with you, and then you can kind of start that spiritual revolution both in yourself and help to grow the movement that we are participating in, if that makes any sense.
Well, absolutely. And what you just described is in microcosm what we are doing on an even bigger scale, because we're creating a counter motion away from the system. And what you did was did that on a small scale. But we have to do more than just draw people towards us and this vision. We have to create an alternative that they can join. And we have to create a counterculture. This was the power in the 1960s. There was a whole counterculture that was different, that people could join up with. They viewed the world in a different way. And that's the paucity or you know the poverty of so-called political movements today and freedom movements, is they don't have that other vision. They're not showing anything different to people, and they're not embodying it in their life. So this is what we need to do. And, you showed a small example of that. Here's one idea you throw it. Here's a quote from Edward Coke, who was the High Court judge in England who took on the king. He said, "When an act of parliament, or in this case, any act of government, is against common right and reason, the common law will control it and adjudge such acts to be void." Now, that's a High Court judge in England saying that people of the right, the commons, and that means all of us who are assembled under our own sovereign power, we have the right to nullify any act of government. And once people, it doesn't take too many to act on that. Once they're aware of that, you have inordinate power way beyond your numbers, and we've proven that time and again.
Absolutely. So it is like you said, it is what I did was basically a microcosm of the macrocosm of what we're creating. And if it works in that localized format, we can also see the results of that working in a much larger way. I mean, I've seen that just from working a little bit with you, how people sort of come out of hiding and realize that what we're discussing is not something to be scared of. It's something that you should kind of take a hold of and realize that you have that. I mean, that's just, I always come back to that. People have to just break that paradigm and realize, look, I am an individual. I am me. I am free. Nobody has control over me unless I give them that authority. I think that it is so vital for people to understand. It's almost like a mantra that you sort of have to repeat, that I am me. I am free. I am independent. I am sovereign. Nobody can tell me what to do unless I give them that ability. And one of the ways you give them that ability is by voting, especially in these rigged elections.
Right. And then it goes to another stage, which is when enough people are, you know, they call it the 100th monkey syndrome. Enough people are at that point of consciousness and action. And then we start thinking in terms of, well, we do not have to go along. We are another body. We are a covenant. We are a new arrangement between people where we establish a new sovereign kind of society at the grassroots. And that's really, you know, kind of the ultimate direction of where we're heading. And this has many aspects. You know, there's a spiritual, there's a personal, there's a political, there's all these things we're going to talk about. But in the weeks ahead, we're going to put this whole discussion in the context of what people are doing on the ground. And like I say, for listeners, if you have stories of how people are fighting back and who are being targeted by the system, please contact us, republicofkanata@gmail.com. We're going to have on the air in coming weeks these brothers who are in jail or facing imprisonment for teaching the common law in workshops. They're being targeted just the same way Dean Clifford was, literally, you know, using police state tactics to keep them quiet. We're going to highlight their stories and also talk about other things happening where you can link up. We know we have listeners down in Sacramento who are planning some important activities over the next while. We're going to hopefully try to get them on the air as well. Any final thoughts or words, Ryan? We've got about 4 minutes left.
Yeah, sure thing. I want people to be aware that this is all very synchronistic. My show tonight, The Secret Teachings, the name of the show, is actually going to be on the subjects that we're discussing now, but more so referring to the cycles of history. And I actually, on the show tonight, go through hundreds and hundreds of years of tyrannies and how they can come about and how we today are experiencing the same form of tyrannies that our ancestors experienced. And basically, again, what we discussed today, how to break free of those and declare that individual sort of independence. So that is one of my main topics tonight, the cycles of history. I'll also be talking about how numbers are very influential in terms of our reality. And that's on tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. You can find a link to that show as well as a chat room, and I'll be in the chat room tonight. We can always have a conversation in there. And you can go to thesecretteachings.info. That's www.thesecretteachings.info, and you can join the chat room with the link from that website page. And I'll be in there tonight during the show.
Yeah, I often think, Ryan, that what we're doing is like, as we've often used this analogy of an exorcism, we are really exorcising a spirit out of ourselves, out of society. And we're really in what's really the third stage of an exorcism, which is you replace one spirit with another. We are replacing the old values and attitudes, but also the actual society, which is being, you know, the institutions are being declared null and void. And the question now is, what do we put in their place? And as Sun Tzu would say, we have to create the field and the terms of battle. It doesn't matter how big your opponent is. You define what the issue is. They have to respond. We proved that in the campaign to expose genocide in Canada and expose Vatican crimes. Now we're doing it at a more basic level on many issues involving the common law and the sovereign republic that is really global. It's our answer to the global corporatocracy. And so for all those listening, please follow our work, republicofkanata@gmail.com is where you can write to us, kanatarepublic.ca, and of course the tribunal website, itccs.org. Please tune in next Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern here at the bbsradio.com/Radio Free Kanata Network. Thanks to all of our listeners. Stay strong and stay clear.
The minstrel boy to the war is gone.